Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable, and we greatly apologize for the technical issues we had this morning. We begin today's show by discussing the power of oil, a three-part frontline documentary investigating the fossil fuel industry's history of casting doubt and delaying action on climate change. The film is based on over 100 interviews and thousands of documents. Several people in the film who spent their careers casting doubt on climate science and working to block climate policies now say they have regrets. Here is the trailer for part one.
For more than 150 years, oil and gas has played a critical role in our society, improving human lives, raising standards of living, and enabling unprecedented economic growth.
What do you do when your industry can no longer exist without creating catastrophes worldwide?
The impacts of climate change are intensifying.
It's important to understand the past. You can't understand where you are if you don't know how you got there.
In a special three-part series, the epic story of our failure to tackle climate change.
The whole world is heating up.
And the role of the fossil fuel industry.
Did big oil knowingly spread disinformation?
Now, in part one, what big oil knew about climate change more than 40 years ago.
The fact that Exxon had been doing rigorous, peer-reviewed research in the 80s was staggering to me.
There were uncertainties, but the uncertainty was when, how fast.
And what happened as the science became more certain?
Scientific evidence remains inconclusive as to whether human activities affect the global climate. So there's simply no reason to take drastic action now.
They realized that it was going to be an existential threat to their business, but they made a deeply unethical decision to try to obfuscate the reality.
We continue to maintain a position that has evolved with science and is today consistent with the science.
We won't solve the climate crisis unless we solve the misinformation crisis.
And that is a clip for the three-part frontline documentary series, The Power of Oil. Today, we're joined by Dan Edge, an award-winning filmmaker and producer of The Power of Oil. Dan Edge has produced and directed documentaries for more than 20 years, covering a wide range of topics, including the West African Ebola outbreak and the psychological toll of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Hi, Dan. Huge thanks to you and your team. Just want to name a few people, Jane McCullen, Gaspin Mohammed, and Robin Barnwell. You all did such an incredible job on this film. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Kurt Davies is founder and director of Climate Investigation Center. Kurt is prominently featured in the film. The Climate Investigation Center is an independent organization that monitors the individuals, corporations, trade associations, political organizations, and front groups who work to delay the implementation of sound energy and environmental policies that are necessary in the face of the ongoing climate crisis. Hi, Kurt. Huge thanks to you and your team for your important work. And thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Great to be here.
Great to have you both. And I'm sorry about the technical issues. First off, Dan, this was a massive undertaking. 100 interviews, thousands of documents. So many people you interviewed in the film had never spoken publicly before. So first off, talk about how this project was born and why you decided to tackle this issue.
Yeah, it's actually born 5 or 6 years ago. We were in full production for over a year, but I started to want to tell this story around about 2016, when there were two really interesting things happening at the same time in the United States. On the one hand, you had probably for the first time in history, a president in the White House who had gone on record saying this climate change thing, it's all a hoax. You know, you had a denier in the White House. On the other hand, you had in states and municipalities across the United States this sort of movement arising to hold big oil companies accountable for their role in the climate crisis, for their history of spreading misinformation. And I thought that the fact that these two things were happening at the same time was fascinating to me, and I wanted to try and sort of trace where both those processes began. And the story really it became evident as we looked more into it and read the journal. There's been some great journalism in this space by other teams, obviously. That those stories led us back into the 1970s and the 1980s, which, as the series explores in quite a lot of detail, is when ExxonMobil were doing really cutting edge research into climate change. And so that sort of the epic saga that we wanted to tell has sort of been 5 years in the birthing. It's hugely difficult to get off the ground, get the resources in place for such an ambitious project. And yeah, we started filming about a year ago.
I have to say it was incredible to learn more about the people who did the work behind the scenes to cast doubt, to ensure delaying action on the climate crisis. And like I said, a number of these people now have regrets. Some people talk about the future that they're giving their grandchildren. How are you able to find all of these people and get them to talk on camera?
Well, it's a huge amount of hard work by my colleagues who you mentioned earlier, Jane McMullen, Gesh Mohammed, Robin Barnwell, and more. So it's basically good old fashioned like hard work. Also, I want to stress we're standing on the shoulders of some fantastic investigative work done by other journalists, by Kurt Davis, and by teams at Inside Climate News and Columbia University. You know, there've been some fantastic, really important work in this space, work that's actually changed the entire story. You know, the work of Inside Climate News and the LA Times in 2016 actually became part of our story because it really changed the whole conversation about climate change. But yeah, finding people who were both involved in either Exxon's pioneering climate change research or the subsequent effort to cast doubt and confusion on climate science was a massive investigative undertaking, which just involved a huge amount of travel, huge amount of phone calls, huge amount of patience, pouring through documents, and then ultimately persuading people to talk.
I'm sorry, I'm having some connection problems this morning. Kurt, can you jump in here and first off, just talk a little bit about the work that you do at the Climate Investigation Center. As I said, you are prominently featured in the film, and your organization monitors the corporations and the front groups who are working to delay the implementation of environmental policies to deal with the climate crisis.
Yeah, thanks. I've been working on essentially this story for the past 20-some years, or at least on the fringes of this. I worked at Greenpeace for 13 years. And, you know, studied intensively how these front groups were operating, the funding streams from Exxon and other channels that were going into these intentional third-party puppets who were saying things that the oil companies couldn't be caught saying. And then some of the real underhanded stuff that they did to undermine, say, Senator McCain when he rose up in the 2000s as a climate champion, or California under Arnold Schwarzenegger became a champion on climate change, and there were forces of evil that hated that. So that's kind of my work. Climate Investigation Center, we do a number of things. We're focused on right now carbon capture. We do a lot of work around the PR industry and its role in climate denial and in confusing people. False solutions like carbon capture and net zero, you'll hear a lot in the advertising world right now. We're pretty narrowly focused on stopping the bad guys from stopping us from solving climate change. So, and in this series, I just have to say the work is incredible. Dan should be congratulated. The entire team was some of the best professional journalists I've ever worked with. And they dug deeper than they didn't take what had been written for granted and for as being the whole story. And they went farther and deeper than anyone's ever gone. Hegel resolution. That was a really incredible move by the industry to block the Kyoto Protocol. So it was really a privilege to work with this team.
That's the thing that also stood out to us, Dan, is, you know, we've done so many shows about what Exxon knew and the power of these industries, but you all did such an incredible job of connecting the dots. And I think bringing people on like former Senator Chuck Hagel to really highlight just how things happen behind closed doors. You uncovered just so much new information. Can you just talk about how you all went about connecting the dots? And I mean, there's so much, I'm sure, that stands out for you, given that this is about 3 hours long. But when you look back, I mean, what really shocked you the most?
Yeah, well, I must say, even though we did uncover some new stuff, and I'm very, very proud of the team for doing that. Also, it still felt like the tip of the iceberg. And I think, I imagine Kurt feels the same way, that, you know, you find something out, it's astonishing, but you know there's so much more just under the surface. And yeah, we spoke to well over 100 people, interviewed well over 100 people for this project. There were maybe 400 or 500 that refused to talk to us. You know, there's so much more work to be done in this space. I think the team, particularly the team looking back on the sort of 80s and 90s, they did great work pouring through the libraries. So the library of Senator Chuck Hagel, the library of Senator Byrd, in the Exxon historical archives, which have already been poured over by journalists, but you know there's a vast amount of material there. And there are some real gems, you know, hidden in there. So it was a lot of sitting, reading through thousands of documents, which, you know, it's actually quite boring work, but the best investigations involve a lot of boring work. And then the exciting stuff is you know, when that oil industry scientist who's never spoken to anyone picks up the phone and says, yeah, okay, I'll talk to you. Hmm. And the Ghesh Mohammed, who directed the second episode, did a fantastic job of persuading former Exxon scientists who'd never spoken before of talking, and not just talking, but really searching their souls, which is you know, what lifts a piece, I hope, from being simply a piece of journalism to being a piece of journalistic filmmaking and storytelling, where you really not only understand what happened, but you understand the impact on a human being of being involved in such a sort of important and epic story as this one.
And Kurt, just to also think about who worked for Exxon back in the day. I mean, you had some of the top scientists working as Exxon consultants. Martin Hoffett is one example, who worked for NASA and then worked as an Exxon consultant and did some incredible groundbreaking climate research. He said in the film, all of the models showed that the average temperature of the Earth would warm. You know, everyone accepted the findings. So can you just talk about that? The level of science that happened at Exxon decades ago around lithium batteries, around solar. Can you talk right. more about that?
I mean, that story, you know, came out about 5 years ago with Inside Climate News and the LA Times Columbia Journalism School Consortium in part. But getting, you know, that was in print. And so when you see these folks talk about it, it's a whole different level of emotional and, you know, connective tissue that you see. And you see the images, the moving pictures of the Exxon scientists on an Exxon tanker doing climate experiments in the early 1980s. Nobody knew about that. I mean, I didn't know about it. I've been studying them for decades. I didn't know that happened until other journalists found them and found that footage. So this is the first time that's been aired, as far as I know, especially nationally and internationally. And it's a little jarring to know that they were studying this so intensively, and they were studying it for a variety of reasons. They were studying it because they knew it was ultimately an existential threat to the company, but they also wanted to be in the game. These scientists were the top graduates of the top scientific institutions employed by Exxon to be forward-looking for the company, because the company saw itself as an energy company, not an oil company, for a period of time. So they were studying solar. They built their own electric car. They took it to Detroit. The car company said, no thanks. But essentially, Exxon built a Tesla in the 80s from scratch. They invested in battery companies. They invested in, you know, a lot of solar research. And then Lee Raymond, the CEO, just shut it down, apparently. So that story we had. Now what this series brings out is what happened next, the period of hardcore denial when they saw the policy arena moving more aggressively and they knew they had to cut it down and that was a real threat to the industry. Wasn't Exxon alone. It was Exxon with basically the entire industrial block, industrial sector of the United States, utilities, the coal industry, the auto industry, all of them in a group called the Global Climate Coalition. And in episode one, that is really well illuminated how that worked and some of the stuff that was going on inside the GCC.
Right, because Dan, we also meet Benjamin Franta, a climate historian, who said, "We know that Shell had a sophisticated understanding of the climate issues by the 80s. So did the coal industry. They knew that business as usual would lead to disasters around the world."
Yeah. What was fascinating to me is that a lot of these major fossil fuel companies had a pretty sophisticated understanding of the science of climate change by the mid to late 1980s, probably earlier actually, but certainly by the mid to late 1980s. Exxon is different. I mean, the depth and the expertise of research that was going on at Exxon is really quite remarkable, quite impressive actually. And the former Exxon scientists we spoke to, they get kind of misty eyed talking about it. It was they see it as a kind of golden age of scientific research within a corporation and cooperation between corporations and government and academic institutions. But they all also see the subsequent turn to denial, or at least spreading doubt and emphasizing the uncertainty of climate science, even as the science grew more certain. They all saw that turn as a tragedy.
Dan Edge is an award-winning filmmaker and producer of The Power of Oil, a new three-part frontline documentary investigating the fossil fuel industry's history of casting doubt and delaying action on the climate crisis. Kurt Davies, the founder and director of the Climate Investigation Center, is prominently featured in the film, and you can watch it online now. Find a link at yourcallradio.org. It is really incredible when you think about the opportunities that could have happened, that the climate action that could have happened, for example, in 1992 under Bill Clinton, and then where we would be today, or under Obama, or where we would be today, George W. Bush, for example. And you go over what could have happened and then how the legislation was stopped. So, Kurt, when you look at these three, what really stands out for you? I mean, for example, in the 90s, Jeff Nesbitt points out that no one had even heard of the Koch industries at that point. And, you know, they founded the Cato Institute, this group called the Citizens for Sound Economy, and they pushed back so hard against a basic tax on energy. And then again, we learn more about George W. Bush and what happened under Obama. So can you just talk about what stands out for you about the machine that really stops this climate policy?
That's exactly right. That's the most amazing part of this story. And we have called it the climate denial machine, but that the story of the BTU tax, or the Clinton energy tax, as the industry called it in 1993, it was the first thing that Al Gore did when he became vice president. And it was a pretty modest proposal to put a tax on fuels according to essentially their carbon content and funnel that money into alternatives, into solving the problem. And it was killed in a matter of months by a very aggressive, very well-planned campaign by Koch Industries with American Petroleum Institute and other oil money. And they specifically targeted certain senators on certain committees who would have to have approved it, and killed it before it was even moving in the Senate, really. And the Clinton administration didn't know what hit them. They were brand new. They really didn't have their policy chops together. And we had come out of, remember, 12 years of Reagan and then Bush the senior as president. So Democrats weren't really used to governing very well. Mm-hmm. Then you move forward in the series to the Bush years, where Bush is promising, you know, he has already on the campaign trail said he doesn't deny climate change and he thinks there should be solutions. He's done stuff in Texas. He's elected. He brings in Christy Todd Whitman as his EPA director, who was the most prominent Republican female politician in the country at the time. Some saw her as presidential candidate at some point. And she, in the Frontline series, gives an incredible testimonial of how she was just kneecapped by Dick Cheney and the others in the Bush administration after a letter from a utility lobbyist said, "You're not going to do this Al Gore nonsense, are you?" Basically, and Christy Todd Whitman quit over it eventually. So we lose a chance there. And then there were multiple policy initiatives in the 2000s. Eventually, Bush comes around and is not terrible in climate, but does nothing. And we've left the Kyoto Protocol. We get to Obama, and the series does a great job of showing how the Koch apparatus, which nobody knew about at the time, built the Tea Party. The Tea Party's attacking everything that moved on the Obama administration, but especially the climate initiative, which was neck and neck with healthcare as the priorities for the Obama administration coming in. He was really elected. Obama was elected mostly on Bush's environmental record, if you go back and look at who was pushing for that election. And they killed the House initiative by Henry Waxman of California and Markey of Massachusetts. And then we're gone for a while. And then the Obama administration can't get it together. And the series ends with, we're still there. The oil industry is still running the game, still causing trouble. However, at the very end, you see Ro Khanna representative of Silicon Valley coming in with a hearing that they held last year, trying to hold the oil bosses accountable for this legacy. So there's a bit of comeuppance at the end, and there are lawsuits in your area, from San Francisco and Oakland and around the country now. There are lawsuits by cities and states, dozens of them, trying to hold these corporations accountable for this legacy of denial and deception.
You know, someone in the film, and I don't recall who said this, but it, around the Obama administration, the fossil fuel industry was experiencing an historic boom with tens of thousands of wells across the United States. And this was a turning point for the fossil fuel industry. It's just really important to remember that, Dan. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, this was something I knew a lot less about when we started the project. And this is one thing I sort of really learned more about, is that there was a historic turning point sort of towards the middle of the Obama administration, when really it was a real chance for renewables to take off. By that time, the technology for solar and for wind was really pretty good, and it was scalable, and it was there. And instead, the United States took a turn to massive expansion of fracking and natural gas. And natural gas, again, I didn't know this when I started this project, but natural gas is disastrous for climate change. If methane leaks, which it routinely does, then the climate impacts, the greenhouse warming impacts, are actually much, much more than carbon dioxide, which is normally seen as the climate villain. So really, it's another of these tragic missed opportunities where not only was industry pushing gas very, very hard, but the Obama administration, which, you know, had tried to pass climate legislation early on. And then, of course, President Obama played a big role in bringing the Paris Agreement together towards the end of his tenure. But in the middle, America essentially became an oil and gas superpower to a greater extent than it ever had been before. So on the one hand, you have a president who's a climate champion. On the other, you have a fossil fuel superpower. And as one of our interviewees says, it's very hard to be both. I mean, you can't be both.
Right. Well, and also in our remaining minutes, can you both talk about the role that the media played around all of this? I mean, you go through these front groups, the Cato Institute, people were writing nonstop op-eds. They put advertisements in newspapers, and often there was no transparency to let people know who was behind these claims. And then, you know, one of the people who was in charge of casting doubt said, well, a lot of these reporters didn't understand these issues. And so they would come to us for background, and then we would just spin the issue. So, Kurt, can you talk about the role the media has played around these issues?
Yeah, it's a bit of a tragedy, really. And I think the media has not been held to account on some of the failures to cover this issue. But what this series also illuminates is how aggressive the PR machine was on the other side. They hired top professional people, including a company run by a guy who was in charge of the campaign to take out Rachel Carson in the 60s when she raised the alarm, the first alarm, Silent Spring, around pesticides. E. Bruce Harrison. Two people were interviewed who worked for him, who worked for the Global Climate Coalition. They're kind of still proud of their work because they were really good and they controlled the narrative. We have documents showing that they're bragging about changing the narrative around science. And we know that they were aggressively hitting editors and writers around this issue to try to tell the other side that there may not be climate change. That continued really into the 2000s, and you'd see reporters covering this issue that tried to be equivocal in some ways. And it's a real shame because it leads the public to doubt it. I mean, the most jarring moment in the series, I think, is the end of the first episode when Chuck Hagel says, "I was lied to, they deceived me." And that's a Republican leader, you know, from the days gone by when Republicans were sane, saying, "I was lied to." And what he did as a result of those lies is put forward policies and a resolution that said, this is not an urgent issue. So the casting doubt has this lasting impact. The media has played a role, still plays a role in hosting advertising. I'm watching the NBA playoffs the other night and a Chevron ad comes up that says, "Human energy, we're solving this through all this nonsense." And they're paying millions of dollars to put that message out. I can't match that. You can't match that. Public radio can't match that. You know, so we're up against it on an ongoing basis.
It's so true. And just to remind listeners again, Chuck Hagel, you know, millions were spent to oppose the Kyoto Protocol. Big Oil was on the same page with advertisements, op-eds, and media interviews. Kyoto was dead, and that meant climate policy was dead for at least 10 years. And as Kurt said in the film, Chuck Hagel said, "They lied and I was misled." What about you, Dan? What really stood out for you when you talked to people about the spin that happened behind the scenes and how, in many cases, the media really just ran with it?
Well, I think in many ways, like, it was ingenious. The approach that the denial machine took was ingenious because it exploited and hacked certain tenets that journalists actually hold very dear, like the idea of balance and the idea of impartiality. And the idea of like healthy skepticism. Now, these are all things that a good journalist tries to bring to their work. And throughout the 90s and the 2000s, until really quite recently, some major media outlets still felt the need to have so-called balance in their climate coverage. Now, of course, that balance was in fact balancing true things with false things. And that's not actually proper journalistic balance. But I grew up, I'm 44 years old, so my entire life spans this narrative that we're telling, if you like. And so I sort of came of age politically in the 90s and the early 2000s. And I'll be honest with you, I was utterly confused about climate change to the point that I wasn't even really interested in it. The media that I consumed, which was from what you'd regard as very sort of reputable outlets, made me think that this was just a controversial issue, and that, you know, it was just people on both sides being very angry with each other about it. And so I just sort of, as a young adult, I sort of stepped away from it. And that's, you know, a whole generation probably did that because we were confused and put off by it. And in retrospect, that was wrong. I mean, the science of climate change was clear by the 1980s. There was a consensus amongst scientists that climate change was happening. The signal was detectable in the 90s. And yet all through the 90s, the media was being played, effectively played to present this as a, you know, well, there's six on this side and half a dozen on that side. And it simply wasn't the case.
Well, thank you again for making this very important series. Dan Edge is an award-winning filmmaker and producer of The Power of Oil. It's a three-part Frontline documentary. Kurt Davies, the founder and director of Climate Investigation Center, is prominently featured in the film. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will discuss the death of the Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.